So we start this morning, I want to start with the story of Abraham and Isaac. We're all very familiar with the story. We're familiar with the story in the chapters of Genesis, where we see Abraham who's evolving away from his family. He's moving away. He's left his family home. God has called him to be a separate and distinct nation. He's called him to be a separate people and live in a different area. And we see that many times in our own lives. We've not really become Seventh-day Adventist during our life. Maybe we were born into an Adventist family. It's more of a story for us where we see that we're maybe moving away from our families. And if we've been Adventists, maybe we have to learn and have our own distinct experience with Christ. And that's Abraham's experience. He's developing an experience that's distinctly different. And as he continues along, he's seeing God's leading in his life in many, many different ways. And God's calling him to be that separate and unique nation. And we come to the story now where after God has promised Abraham, who's been childless, and Sarah, who's been childless, he promises that he'll make a great nation of him. In fact, he changes his name from Abram to Abraham as a distinction and an evolution of who he is. And as he's listening to God's promises, his heart is growing bigger and he's encouraged by this. And it comes to the time we know the point where the story of Abraham and Sarah and Hagar, where Sarah really wants to take into her own hands that fulfillment of the promise, right? Many times we take that opportunity. We believe that God's had a special calling for us, or we see that something we believe has to happen in our lives. And we want to fulfill that and help God. But God doesn't need our help in those ways, does he, to fulfill his own promises? And we read continually, we go to chapter 22. Abraham and Sarah have now had a child, the child of the promise that was originally given. And that child's name is Isaac, right? Child's name is Isaac. And we see Abraham going through the process after he's been called by God to give up that son, his only son, right? And we see this as a metaphor in many ways for God sending his son Jesus Christ to this earth to live a life and then finally to die for the sins of the entire world, all those that would follow after him. And we read in chapter 22 of the book of Genesis, "And it came to pass after these things that God did tempt Abraham and said unto him, Abraham. And he said, Behold, here I am. And he said, Take now thy son, thine only son Isaac, whom thou lovest, and get thee into the land of Moriah, and offer him there for a burnt offering upon one of the mountains which I will tell thee of." Was this something a little different and unusual? Right? This was not something that was normally an instruction that came from God. We see as the Ten Commandments are given, right? Thou shalt not kill. We see as time rolls on, God's, through his prophets, giving the instruction and condemning child sacrifice. But here we see something that's unusual that's happening. "And Abraham rose up early in the morning, saddled his ass, and took two of his young men with him, and Isaac his son, and clave the wood for the burnt offering, and rose up and went unto the place which God had told him." So there transpired a time where Abraham had to think about this thing, to think about what God was asking him to do. Do you think there was any anxiety, any doubts, any thoughts about this? Surely this isn't what God has asked me. Maybe I'm hallucinating, right? Because this is such a distinctly odd thing to ask. He goes and he thinks about asking his wife, Sarah, and consulting with her. And then he realizes if he were to do so, he would never, ever fulfill this command. And so he simply takes the wood that has already been split and ready to go. And he takes his son and he goes and he saddles up with his servants. And they head for the place that was appointed. And as they head there and they get closer, at this point, Abraham wants this to be a more private moment. And he asks for the servants to stay behind. And he says, my son and I will go alone. My son and I will go alone. And Abraham took the wood of the burnt offering and laid it upon Isaac his son. And he took the fire in his hand and a knife, and they went both of them together. And Isaac spake unto Abraham his father and said, my father. And he said, here am I, my son. Up to this point, it's been a very largely quiet journey as they made their way and took the several day trip that they needed to take to go to this special place. And all along the way, Isaac can see his father's troubled face. He can see that his father is not his normal self. Many times we see our relatives in the course of life and we see something maybe that's different than them, and we'll ask them what? What's wrong? Right? We ask them what's going on. And here Isaac's been going on. They've been quiet for several days. This isn't normal. And so finally Isaac asks him, and he asks the obvious question. And Isaac said unto his father, my father. And he said, Here I am. And he asks about the lamb, because anytime they've ever had a sacrifice, the lamb has been there. And Abraham said, my son, God will provide himself a lamb for a burnt offering. So they went both of them together, and they came to the place which God had told him of. And Abraham built an altar there and laid the wood in order. So at this point, now Abraham has had to share this story, share the request that came from God. And now Isaac understands what his fate is to be. Abraham's a very old man at this point. The years of his manly strength have kind of passed. He's not what he was before. In contrast to Isaac, who has now just come into the bloom of his young manhood. And he's a strong young man. And if he doesn't want to cooperate, there's little chance that Abraham can force him to. Instead, Isaac, hearing where this has come from, is actually honored. He's honored that this has been his calling. And so he submits, and he willingly lays on the altar. And even so, Abraham still ties his wrists at that point in time. But again, he has to submit to do that. And Abraham stretched forth his hand and took the knife to slay his son. And the angel of the Lord called out to him out of heaven and said, Abraham, Abraham. And he said, here am I. And he said, lay not thine hand upon the lad, neither do thou anything unto him. For now I know thou fearest God, seeing thou hast not withheld thy son, thine only son, from me. From eternity past, the Lord has known all the things that would transpire. He's seen everything that would ever happen before he created mankind, before he created the angelic hosts. He has seen all of these things, and he's in control of the universe. At that point in heaven, when he created all of these things, heaven was a perfect place. It was a manifestation of the character of God's love, which is God's character. And we all know that. We understand that. He also, as a result of that, and knowing and understanding that love is not something that's compelled, it's not something that can be forced, he also added freedom to also part of that equation. Freedom to worship or not. Freedom to praise or not. Commandment keeping was a choice. Faith is not enforced, but it's lovingly given. Lucifer, who was the brightest of all the angels, he shone brighter than all the angels of the angelic host. He was their leader. He was their choir director. He was all that would be to lead the angelic host in worship before God. Was there, and he stood there in the presence of God, very close to his personal presence. But he allowed pride to come into his heart. And at first, he started on a path that he didn't realize. And finally, he ended up openly choosing to rebel against God, leading those that were there in the heavenly kingdom, the rest of the angelic hosts, leading them to the point of saying that God is a dictator, that he is an authoritarian, that he doesn't give choice, that in fact, if you followed Lucifer, that you would have freedom of choice. And so in misrepresenting God's character and deceiving the angels, there was no place found for them or for Lucifer or the angels, and they were cast down to the earth. From eternity past, as I said before, God has known our choices and the outcomes. And yet, he gave his crowning creation freedom of choice. Each and every one of us has that freedom given to us. We heard some of that in Dr. Keith's message talking about that as being one of the primary things that was written down for us at the beginning and the founding of this country. And it's kind of interesting, we'll see this next week, those who come to the final empire presentations. It's interesting how we've seen throughout the earth and throughout history, really the rise and fall of freedoms until we get to the last nation, the U.S. here, to have those freedoms. Without the freedom of choice, mankind could not give testimony to the character of God. It could always be argued that mankind loved God because he was made to. It could be argued that mankind obeyed God because he was made to. And instead, God wanted to have that free-flowing testimony, even though the risk was incredibly great. Terribly great. From that sixth day of creation, mankind has had the ability and the choice and the freedom to sin or not to sin, to follow God's requests or to not follow. In Romans 6:16, we see the outworkings of that. It says, "Know ye not that to whom ye yield yourselves servants to obey, his servants ye are whom ye obey, whether of sin unto death or obedience unto righteousness." And then we came to the garden. And in the garden, God has given that opportunity, that freedom, as we talked about already. And in talking to the enemy in the tree, we all know the story of how Eve was deceived and Adam followed after and made that choice. Again, it was a choice. It was a choice that they had to make, theirs alone to make. And we've seen the outworkings of that choice for the last 6,000 years since then. But there was a plan originally in God's kingdom for that. God, knowing that mankind would make that choice that he did, in consultation with his son Jesus, the Father, they basically ended up coming to the same conclusion. And Jesus said, "I will go. I will go. I will be that propitiation. I will be that sacrifice for mankind." And so the plan was ensured and it was put into place. And this plan said that to redeem and restore that which was lost to humanity, that freedom, in essence, as Adam and Eve chose, as we see in Romans 6:16, as Adam and Eve chose to follow after Satan's suggestions and to sin, they became the slaves, or they became the citizens of Satan's kingdom on this earth. But that plan had to be put in place to bring back and redeem mankind. And so Jesus had to choose to lay on that altar of the cross to give us that opportunity for freedom. And there on Golgotha, where Jesus died on that cross, the Father willingly allowed and placed his son on the altar like Isaac. And Jesus became a willing sacrifice for each and every one of us. Our freedom is our most costly sacrifice that has been given to us and must be placed on the altar of the cross before we can be truly free. So many times in our society today, as we look at social media or as we look at the media around us or we hear any kind of influences, the suggestions put forth to us that for us to be free, we need to make our own choices and do our own thing. And no one and no word, no book can tell us what to do. And as we're given that as the suggestion, it's quite contrary. There's a misrepresentation of God's character. It's not that he wants us to wear the yoke of what he has. Instead, we've been given a freedom through him. And the only condition on that of that freedom is becoming one with Christ and living the life that he lived or would have lived, and he taking up our lives. And only when we surrender our freedom at the altar of that cross are we truly free. Many times as we continue to look at that requirement, many of us struggle with it in different ways. And when we use our freedom to think and act contrary to the will and character of God, it's actually then when we put those shackles on. I appreciated the message that was shared during the Sabbath school time, the discussion that we had. And really what we came down to is the world sees things in such a converse way from what it truly is. It's totally turned upside down. And we live with this every day. And if we never learn the truth, we'll accept that reverse of what's reality. And so for us to continue forward, we need to see that and look in the perfect law of liberty as described by Paul. He gives us that understanding of what that freedom really looks like. The alignment, the willing alignment of our choices, our lives, what we call our freedom, with God's will, with his character, is the path to freedom. I have a quote here. God does not design that our will should be destroyed, for it is only through its exercise that we can accomplish what he would have us to do. Our will is to be yielded to him that we may receive it again, purified and refined, so linked in sympathy with the divine that he can pour through us the tides of his love and power. What a powerful quote. That understanding that in joining with him, not falling in subjection, fighting what he has, but instead aligning with him and allowing him to live out his life in us, it's through that means that we're able to be free. Many times the world doesn't understand this, instead rebels and continually struggles against that. Many times we see that as we come to the altar of cross, people come with a thought of sorrow, and they come at what they're losing, right? But it's not true. It's not true at all. God will take away our sorrow instead and will give us joy in the life that he gives to us and the living that. If we give him our tears, he'll give us laughter. And he's promised this in so many ways. Mary Stuart, Queen of Scots, before her execution, wrote in her book of devotions these words, O Lord my God, I have trusted in thee. O Jesus, my dearest one, now set me free. In prison's oppression, in sorrow's obsession, I weary for thee. With sighing and crying, bowed down as dying, I adore thee, I implore thee, set me free. And for our freedom, God was willing to send his son, his only son. And unlike Isaac, he didn't take it away from Jesus. Jesus instead took it for us. He was willing to forfeit, give away heaven's favor. We know that he stepped down from that magnificent, elevated place that he was at and came to this earth as a child in the most humble of conditions and situations. And instead, he took our situation as well. It was 1999, and my family and I lived in a house that we had purchased in Delaware. And we had moved in, and it was a brand new house, brand new construction. It had been a farmer's field prior to that. There were a lot of creatures and animals that lived in the area. We started having problems with mice and other different things. And one day we were in the house, and just to give you a little sense of it, we had a two-story colonial. And on the second story, we had our washer and dryer, right? I don't think I've lived in a house since then like that, have we? That was the only one that I remember we've lived in that had that. And there was an open foyer area that you could see right from where the washer and dryer was, and as well as from all the bedrooms. And as you looked down on it, it was all open, two stories, and you could see the front windows, the front door. And if you turned around, if you imagine I'm looking at you and you're in the foyer area, if I turn around from here, here's the washer and dryer. And so we came up and we heard this noise, and it's like this thumpy noise, and didn't know what it was. And we looked in the dryer and there was nothing. And as soon as we looked in the drawer, in the dryer, it got worse. And it was more racket than was before. And so I decided I needed to take the dryer and unhook it, right? So you undo the clamp and remove the dryer vent hose and all those types of things. And when I pulled away the pipe, there was a little barn swallow in there. And I could only think that barn swallows, being the way they are, they love to go in tight little spaces and build nests and things like that. He went into the pipe that was part of the dryer venting, and he dropped down into the pipe and couldn't get out. And so I pulled the dryer away. I pulled the vent piping away. And when I pulled this away, nothing happened at first. And so I kind of tapped on the wall a little bit, and I did a few things. I didn't want to reach in and grab the bird. You know, they can kind of peck. And not only that, I'm sure it was already incredibly frightened to begin with. So I didn't want to do that. And eventually the bird came out of the hole and started to fly around our house. And we had a lot of windows in the front of our house and on the sides, and the bird kept hitting the window. The poor thing kept just thumping into the window, thinking that if it could just go the direction that looked right to it, it would be free. How many times do we consider that for ourselves? With what we see with our eyes, we think that's the right direction. And we think we'll be free. We'll get what we're hoping for. Things will turn out the way that we're hoping. If we marry this person, they'll make us happy. Or we have this job, they'll make us happy. And that's not always God's plan. So this little bird keeps flying around. Eventually, the bird gets tired and sits down on the furniture. And we had some furniture that was near the front of the house. And didn't know what do we do. So one of our family, I talked to my wife about this the other night, and we don't remember who it was, but somebody opened the door. And eventually we waited, and the bird flew out and took off for the heights that bird could achieve. Flapped his little wings, and he left this prison house that was really our house. It was a prison for him. And he started flying away. Excuse me, I'm going to grab my water. He started flying away, and we could see him take flight. And he was free from our house. And maybe you yourselves, you feel trapped, right? Trapped in a prison like that little bird, trying to break out of the house of sin. And I invite you today, while there's time, I invite you today to hear the Savior's voice and go to Him, because He's the way, right? He's the door. He is the way to eternal life. And I invite you today to trust in the mercies of God. Trust in His mercies. We look so many times for a solution of our own, or we see the way and we turn back. And the interesting part was, probably, I don't know, 3 days, a week later, I saw a barn swallow flying around my house again. How many times are we like that? We gain our freedom and then we want to go back. And we want to go back and we don't realize Jesus is the way. We need to keep following Him. Stay away from the prison house of sin. Paul talks about that opportunity to follow Jesus in the end of Romans chapter 7. And he says, "O wretched man that I am, who shall deliver me from this body of death?" Paul doesn't leave us hanging. He doesn't cause us just to sympathize. We don't go away feeling this is the normal course of our lives, that we have no other choice. Right? So many times we say, I was born with a temper. Or, I'm just drawn that way. Or, I just eat these things. Or, I do this. Or, I do that. Or, whatever else it is that's in our lives that we know or God has convicted us are contrary to His Word. Right? We don't have to live that way. Instead, Paul opens to the door to hope when he says, I thank God through Jesus Christ, our Lord. There is a way. In Jude 24, we see an echo of that, in that possibility for our salvation, that the Lord will do this for us. We see in Jude 24, now unto him that is able to keep you from falling, to present you faultless before the presence of his glory with exceeding joy. He can not only present us before the Father as having his character, but now he can also change that nature that we have now, that character we have, to want to be like him by beholding him, by beholding Jesus. We can be free like the barn swallow. And freedom's not an event. It's not a revolution, right? We think sometimes that tomorrow we'll just wake up and it'll be all set. I don't know. Some of you, how many of you run a marathon before? I never have, but I know some of you run a marathon, a half marathon even maybe, right? I think there are a few that could hold up your hands. And if you've ever done that, did you go from sitting on your couch for months on end to strapping on your shoes? You didn't, right? And for those who have gone through other things physically where you've had to prepare physically, right? If you've had any military service, you know, there's something called a physical fitness test, right? A PT test. And you'd have to go take that PT test. And you couldn't have just been eating the Twinkies and all this other stuff and never exercising the muscles and expect to be successful. So it's the same for us in our spiritual lives, in that spiritual dimension. It's very similar in the sense that we need to continue to follow the Lord each day through His Word and prayer. And we can do that. He doesn't give us a prison house. He offers us the freedom of His life. It says in Isaiah 53:5, He was wounded for our transgressions. He was bruised for our iniquities. The chastisement of our peace was upon Him. And with His stripes we are, it says here, healed. But I would also suggest we are freed as well. It says in John 8:36, If the Son therefore shall make you free, ye shall be free indeed. And so I'm going to encourage you with that. I know it's a little different than the normal message that we hear on Liberty Sabbath, right? We talk about and listen to and understand that we're blessed to have religious liberty, right? We're blessed to have the freedom to be able to worship in this country, and that we're working in other areas of the world to enable others to have that same freedom. But we're also free from sin, or free from the need to be enslaved by sin, by following Jesus Christ. And I want to encourage you with that today as we close out our time together.